welcome to The Best Worst Story You've Never Read. I'm your host, Cameron Lindsay, and each week I hope you'll join me to hear a story that sucks. A tale that is so terrible, an adventure so awful, that it's great. This week, the podcast is on the road. We are recording from our special guest's house, Kyle Rather. I will be reading Chapter 5 of the ongoing story. So without further ado, here is Wandering Wanderers, A Mystery, Chapter 5, by Z.F. Windler, 11. Ambrose sat in his room at the hotel with his head in his hands. He didn't know how this could have happened. Suspecting that something was amiss when Eisenhower kept making those comments at the investigation site, Ambrose had followed Eisenhower for the rest of the night after being dropped off at the hotel. He had seen Eisenhower's elaborate map of clues. He had heard Eisenhower plotting aloud how he could turn Ambrose in and continue the killings. He knew he was being framed. But there was nothing he could do about it without also revealing his own killings. As all of this was happening, he picked up the smell of rotting meat and wilderness and knew that his whole world really was crashing down around him. The Bureau had sent the best internal investigations agent they had. Fox Boulder.
I really am lamped,
Ambrose said to himself in his empty hotel room. Boulder was so cunning and sly.
If two heads are better than one, how is my one head supposed to outsmart those 13 fox heads that collectively make up Boulder?
Tears were welling up in the corner of his eyes as he thought about the calls he made when he first arrived in Dorsey Cliffsburg. The next call to his mother would likely be in custody, if he lived long enough to make another call. And then there was Wendy. Even if he called her, she probably wouldn't answer. He had really ruined things with her. He thought about the nights they had spent together in secluded mountainous towns like this one, with the trees and air and majesty all around. But the greatest majesty had always been Wendy. He was certain that, if he could bring her back to that place, he could win her back. He snapped up. That was just the way things had to be. He had to take whatever measures he could to make sure he had the chance to speak with Wendy again. Ambrose grabbed his gun and headed out of the hotel. Eisenhower sat in his office staring at the web. It had been so many years since he started this. The early years before he realized all the killings were the same person. Later, when he pieced together that it was Ambrose and the rage he dealt with knowing that there was a killer out there that was so much better than himself. And just the other day, when Ambrose finally walked right into his trap. He was a striking figure, and Eisenhower did not expect that. He had never seen Ambrose in person, and he was surprised to see just how rugged he was. He expected years of hiding the secret of all the killings to wear on the man, and there were some signs. Ambrose's voice was rough and gravelly. Ambrose had a scar across his right hand in the shape of the letter Q that he claimed was from a knife fight with a fugitive, but Eisenhower knew it was from a struggling victim, victim number 4, in his early years of the killings. And he seemed tired, like he had been awake for many days. Besides these, though, Ambrose carried himself swiftly with intention, and with a certain bravado that Eisenhower found appealing. Eisenhower took a sip of his whiskey. He had spent too much time planning on framing and or killing Ambrose that he had hardly taken the time to really admire him. There was so much more to Ambrose than Eisenhower originally saw. But it was too late for these thoughts. Fox Boulder was making calls in the other room, and they were making the arrest together in just a couple of hours. He took another sip. And yet, if there was a chance, maybe things could turn out differently. Fox Boulder hung up the phone in the room next door to Eisenhower's office. The foxes that made up his lower half adjusted so that he stood up and they sauntered over to the window together and took in the view of the town. Dorsey Cliffsburg was practically the wilderness. Very few lights were on at this time of night, and the stars and the moon reflected off the snow-topped trees and frozen streams to make a beautiful display. The fox that served as the head began to wonder about his family. His wife and cubs would be settling in for hibernation about now. They would have spent weeks gathering food, eating grass and bark to slow their digestive systems, and ensuring the structural integrity of the burrow. He missed them. But he was only one fox amongst many, and they all had a job to do. It was amazing in its own way. 13 foxes standing on top of each other to make a human-like figure for all these years, and yet, they had never felt so distant from all other living creatures. What was this job doing to them/him? Ambrose was the closest thing Fox Boulder had of to a friend in the Bureau, and they had only spoken twice. To say friends was even a lie. At best, they just shared a mutual admiration for each other's work. And now, Fox was going to arrest Ambrose. Chances are the event would result in conflict, and Fox would have to kill Ambrose in a shootout. The fox serving as the left foot and heel let out a whimper. Maybe it was because he was tired of being at the bottom of this fox pyramid. But maybe it was something else. Maybe it was because he knew that, if they could do this over again, Fox Boulder might have found what he was looking for here in Dorsey Cliffsburg with Ambrose and Eisenhower by his side. They were not so different. That was Chapter 5 of Wandering Wanderers, A Mystery, by Z.F. Windler, 11. And now time for the part of the show where we bring on a special guest to talk about the story that we just heard. Today we have Kyle Rather, a conversational flaneur and namer of the winds.
Hi, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming here, I guess, to your home.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thank you for inviting us in here, myself, the giant wheel of games, and the high-powered magnets.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, once we were able to fit you through the half-size door, it's been a great breeze.
Yeah, I mean, it was difficult to get in. I'm pretty tall. I'm almost 6 foot, so... and the wheel and the magnets, yeah, are also about 20 feet tall. So
yeah, no, we had to do some really tight squeezing, but yeah. Yeah. They're here now.
Yeah, I meant to ask, why is the door so half sized?
It's for less rent.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So you've lowered the roof on the.
That's right. Half
on the price.
Half the house, and half the rent.
All right. Well, it's a lovely. It's a lovely home.
Yeah, thank you.
I particularly appreciate. Kind of the mood that's set by having to hunch over.
Yeah, well, you know, and it puts you closer to the my collection of Afghan rugs.
Oh, and they are also lovely.
Oh, thank you.
The
thank
red
you.
One is particularly nice.
Thank you. Yeah, I hoped you'd notice that.
It reminds me of my aunt.
Great.
Yeah, she looked a lot like an Afghan rug, actually.
Yeah, well,
a red Afghan rug.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So it reminded me of her, yeah. Well, what about these other things about you? I feel like my listeners would be interested to hear about this conversational flaneur.
Sure.
I mean, I know what a flaneur is, but for the listeners.
Well, I assume they do too, you know. So, you know, as a flaneur, I spend my time sauntering around the streets of Paris,
mm-hmm.
Sort of taking in the atmosphere, enjoying the city, walking the streets, just sort of soaking in the time around me.
Okay, and flaneur is it comes from 18th to the 19th century.
Yeah, that's right. Of course.
See, I knew the term from when I was in France during those
sure.
times, and we knew the conversational flaneurs. Well, just the flaneurs, I guess they weren't conversational.
Yeah, that's an important distinction. So
yeah.
I'm not just a flaneur. I'm a conversational flaneur, and so I think that. It's really important to note the difference between those.
Yeah.
Like not in beyond just sort of like walking through the streets, beyond just you know, sort of soaking in the 18th and 19th centuries. I'm also doing that through conversation, through thought.
So you're a modern day flaneur, a modern day
Well, actually, the modern day Flaneurs are also their own separate group. But it's easy. Okay. I can see how you'd see you might
maybe a hybridization.
At times.
Okay. All right. Well, what about the namer of the winds? That's an interesting.
And there's a great story behind that.
We'd love to hear it.
Okay. Well, you know, when I was growing up around the streets of
Paris, as a child.
Yes, as a child.
Okay.
When I wasn't, you know, finding scraps on the ground and begging for, you know,
sure,
you know, francs, mm-hmm. I would feel the wind, and but I didn't know what it was. I'd feel this sense of air mm-hmm. crossing by me, and I thought, you know, there really needs to be a name for this thing. And so after a while, you know, and then as during my travels as a conversational flaneur, mm-hmm. it occurred to me that nobody had ever named this thing. And so I said, you know, I think I'm going to call it the wind.
Oh, so you're not.
And I never expected that it would be the way it is today.
It's just,
you know,
gone.
I still tell people, I can't believe it. Everybody calls it the wind. I was like, it was just a whim.
A whim would have also been appropriate.
Well, it almost was. It was my second choice. I said wind or whim, wind or whim.
Yeah.
It just happened that the lady at the store heard me say wind and not
whim. And she
whim.
Thought it was good.
She thought it was good.
She was
one
like,
thing
this
came
is,
to the next.
This is great.
Pretty here we are today. Here we are
that's
today.
Impressive. See, I thought that maybe as the namer of the wind, that you had named many different winds, but you just named wind overall.
Yeah, well, you know, I thought about that. It occurred to me for a while, and I had a great chance to name other winds, and you know,
you just did the one.
It just passed me by. It, you know, if there's
like
one, if there's one great regret in life, it's that it passed me by. Oh, I'm sorry. That's my wife. She is a small doorbell.
Oh,
yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, it's funny we ran into each other. It's because I heard her carried through the wind.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
so
and that's how the conversation got.
It's been amazing. Yeah,
you brought your flaneuring skills.
That's right. Once she found out I was a conversational flaneur, mm-hmm. the rest is history.
Well, you know, Kyle, you're really fascinating. I think the flaneuring, naming wind, married to a doorbell, living in a half size house.
Yeah, thank you.
These are all really fascinating things. But I think what the listeners are going to be most interested in is your opinions about the story,
sure.
Chapter 5 of Z.F. Wendler's 11's continuing epic, Wandering Wanderers: A Mystery.
Yeah, no, it's an incredible work. I was on the edge of my seat the entire time.
Yeah,
I did wonder why there was less wind, but you know, you can't have everything.
It's true, and we've still got the listeners might be disappointed that this wasn't the conclusion, which I believe I told them in our previous episode. But that means there's still time for more wind.
That's right. Yeah, you know, you just got you can't stop a good thing, and I think Zwindler understands that.
Yeah, I feel like I understand now why Z.F. Wendler 11 thought that their story was appropriate for this podcast. It's starting to get a little weird.
Yeah.
It started off pretty typical, like, detective story and has gone pretty atypical now, I think.
Mm, yeah.
Maybe you could talk briefly about like any feelings that it evoked in you. Anticipation seemed to be one of them, but anything else?
I mean, I would say existential dread more than anything.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The story's particularly evoked that, or that was already there?
Well, I mean, I think it tapped into it in a way.
Oh, I see.
It's very, very savvy of you to notice. Yeah. I sort of carry myself with a little bit of that dread hanging over me, but the way that the story was able to sort of like really funnel that into my own inner anxieties is truly, truly astounding.
And I think funneling is a good word to describe what this story is doing and has been doing from the beginning to all of the listeners. It's funneling lots of things.
Yeah.
Existential dread, obviously.
Right.
Kind of a sense of like misplaced happiness.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like you don't exactly you feel like you're happy about something, but then you find out later that that's not the case.
Sure.
Maybe a slight bit of constipation, but that might have been all the cheese that I ate earlier.
Yeah. Perhaps.
Yeah. It could be. And just like a general odor of like potato chips, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. Especially in the Eisenhower section.
Oh, yeah.
The potato chips are just like unavoidable.
Yeah. And it's amazing that Z.F. Wendler 11 is able to do that without having even mentioned potato chips.
It's truly a gift. I mean, it's really a remarkable work.
Yeah. I agree. Remarkably remarkable and yet also horrid, just absolutely terrible.
Yeah. In particular, I thought I thought the section of Ambrose thinking and considering the movement of the foxes within Agent Fox truly sort of like captured the deep anxieties we all have about, you know, our own inner movements.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. That's interesting. Yeah. We always feel like we, like Fox Boulder, are maybe trying to move a variety of different parts.
Sure, yeah. I mean, even within myself, I feel like there are at least two or three foxes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I would say mine are more, maybe like two wolves and a coyote.
Sure. Well, you've had more time to collect larger animals.
Yeah,
so.
That's true. Well, hey, what about a game?
Would that be
interesting? Would that interest you?
I'm up for a game.
Okay, so it's not so much a game, actually. That's kind of a lie. I don't know if you're familiar with the podcast or not. Well, you invited us here, so I guess you're at least somewhat familiar.
Sure.
Otherwise, you wouldn't have known to invite me here for the podcast.
Of course. I would say I got in on the ground floor.
Oh. Well, I mean, here you are on the ground floor.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Not much places to go.
You can only get in on the ground floor.
Right,
so.
That's true. Anyway, so you'll know that every episode we ask the guest to write a response to the story that we just heard.
Yeah.
The trick is they only get 5 minutes to write it. Not very much time. So I'm going to ask you, we've previously written a prequel. We've had a look at Fox Boulder and a look at Ambrose and a look at Eisenhower.
Right.
So I've really run the gambit on all the characters, right?
Yeah.
What I'm thinking you should do is maybe write a critical response, maybe like a review, like as if you were going to be publishing this in a newspaper or something.
Yeah, okay.
But you'll still only get 5 minutes.
Sure.
So that sounds good?
Yeah, that sounds great.
All right. Well, we'll take our 5 minutes now. And we're back. Those 5 minutes.
Oh yeah, just passed, right under the bar.
Yeah, passed like hands on a clock.
It was. It truly was.
So you wrote a review.
Yeah, I did. I did.
Are you ready to read it?
Oh, absolutely.
So this is a review of ZF Windler 11's Wandering Wanderers, a mystery.
That's right. Dear readers, I have the distinct pleasure of sharing with you the newest sensation to print, and dare I say, art. Wandering Wanderers, a Mystery by ZF Windler 11 follows the distinct legacy of our time's greatest prose, including Hemingway, Joyce, Dylan, and Stephanie Meyer. It's no small feat for a writer to access the depth of emotion, knowledge, and heartfelt truth that this author does, and it's a treasure that we get to share these feelings and knowledge with these characters. With Agent Ambrose, we find the depths of wit, wisdom, and canny suspicions, not seen since the skepticism of Poirot. Like Sheriff Eisenhower, we've all felt the deep suspicion of existence and longed for his air of folksy winsomeness and life found in Dorsey Cliffsburg. No doubt, we've each had times where we've been made up of a jumble of foxes like Agent Fox Mulder. And I think it's important that we take a moment to recall and appreciate our pupil-like forest enchantment phases. While this is no doubt a masterpiece that will stand the winds of time, much like the Egyptian pyramids of yore, it should be noted that the only addition that would have made this work better would be the addition of more wind. While their absence doesn't detract from the deep feelings of lore within Wandering Wanderers, its addition would have only made this work that much better. 4 out of 5 stars. Thank you.
Thank you. That was great. I feel like had I not read this and then I read that, then I would read this.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's what I was going for. You know, I think the people out there really need this work. It's really important for our time.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. And I think now is a great time to plug then the Facebook page for this podcast, newly created. If you are not a fan, or the people that you don't know aren't fans, they should be, so that they can hear
send great it to the works. People who don't know.
Yeah. So that way they can hear great works like Wandering Wanderers, A Mystery, and many more to come.
It's really important. This is really important work you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you. And it's really important work that ZF111 and many others are doing. And our guests, honestly, we couldn't do it without our guests. We are currently doing it without our listeners. We have like maybe 30.
Sure.
So I would say we couldn't do it without them.
But I am. Yeah.
We are.
I see. Yeah.
It's happening whether or not anyone's listening. Hmm. It answers the age-old question of if a podcaster makes a podcast in a forest, does anyone hear it?
Yeah, and does it help you access your childhood forest enchantment phase? And I think it does that.
The podcast does?
Yes, of course.
Hmm.
Not to the extent that ZF Windlayer 11 does, but
no,
you know,
but
I think we're on that path.
Yeah,
a metaphorical and forest like path.
Hmm. Hmm. And it's not too gravelly. Like there's not too many pebbles along the path.
Sure. Yeah.
A couple of big boulders that you have to surmount. But,
yeah. Perhaps sometimes the boulder is a giant game wheel, and sometimes the boulder is the dread of existence that you feel right before you open your eyes in the morning.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just a boulder.
Yeah. Sometimes a boulder is just a boulder.
Yeah.
Except when it's a cigar.
And sometimes it's a wind. Did I mention the wind?
You've a couple of times.
Okay.
But you also mentioned the big wheel of games. So what if we use it?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Another game.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so the big wheel, I don't know if you noticed, but it has several attachments to it, right?
Mm. Yeah, I see.
So it has, you can just spin it. Just with your hand manually spin the wheel.
Okay. Should I do that right now?
Or? Well, I'm going to give you a couple of options of ways that you can spin it.
Okay. Could the wind spin it if the wind were blowing hard enough?
If the wind were blowing hard enough in here, it could, but I don't think the wind could get in through the small door.
Yeah, not through that half door. We'd have to open up more than half of a window, and unfortunately,
only half
windows
in here, too.
Yeah.
But there are, as you can see, three buttons attached to it as well, standing on little pedestals. Two of them will shock you.
Okay.
And it's a pretty heavy shock.
Okay.
So I would recommend not choosing the two that shock you. But as you can see, they're not labeled as which ones will shock you.
Yeah. How hard could it be?
So you can choose between those three. If you choose two wrong ones in a row, then you probably will need to go to the hospital and we'll probably have to stop. So maybe don't choose that one.
Sure.
That option of spinning the wheel.
Right.
As you can see as well, there is like this big nose on top, right?
Okay, yeah, there it is.
We recently added that. If you stick your finger in it, you can find a feather, right? And then you use the feather to tickle the nose. The nose will sneeze, and then the sneeze will cause the wheel to start spinning.
Sure, yeah, that makes sense.
Or you can just spin it with your hand.
Okay.
Whichever one you want.
I think I'm going to pick the button.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, well, yeah, pick one of the buttons then, and I hope you don't shock yourself.
Okay.
Oh, well, so it seems like it wasn't. Did you feel a shock? I mean, it's spinning the wheel.
Yeah, so. Just a slight shock.
Yeah.
Slight shock.
It's probably because the other ones have such a high voltage.
Yeah.
I mean, if I put my hand next to the buttons.
Through the ether.
If I put my hand next to the other buttons, I can feel the electricity, the power.
And that's not just because of your being.
No. And it's not the high-powered magnets either.
Okay.
The magnets do give off like a pulsing sensation, but that's not related. Anyway, it seems like it's stopping on a game now.
Okay. There it is.
Yeah. So this game is called Know and Tell. Know and Tell.
Okay.
The way that this game works is it's like Show and Tell, right?
All right.
Except this is audio.
Hmm.
It's a podcast, in case you forgot.
You
remember.
I forgot for just a second.
But now you remember.
Thank you.
It's a podcast, so you can't show something.
Mm.
So no.
Mm-hmm.
No show.
No show.
But you still have to tell.
Okay.
So if you have something here in the apartment that you'd like to show or know, rather, and you can tell us about it.
Well, I actually happen to have this collection of 17th century mouse skulls. And, you know, I just sometimes I see them over in the corner and I think, yeah, I need to pull these things out.
Yeah, I think that would be great. I think our listeners would love to hear about that. I would ask, though, that, I mean, it seems like you have a lot.
Sure. That,
like, if just looking, it seems to be about, what, 11,342?
Give or take. Yeah, that's exactly right.
I would ask that you only choose one.
Okay.
Because we are trying to keep a tight shift here.
No, it's so hard to pick just one. I mean, I would say that each is special to me in its own way.
Mm-hmm.
I actually happen to have one in mind that I think would be really special to share.
Okay.
It came from the Tsar of Russia.
Oh, wow.
The end of the 18th century.
Okay.
And actually, this mouse skull, and the mouse itself too, was made into a Fabergé egg.
Hmm.
That's right. So a small...
Like an egg was made around it, or like its body was made into...
Its body was made into an egg.
Oh, okay.
It was shaped, extruded into an egg.
Hmm.
Yeah, so
was that painful for the mouse?
Well, you know, I don't know. We'd have to ask him.
Or someone else who had been made into a Fabergé egg.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyone who'd gone through that experience. If you've gone through the experience of being made into a Fabergé egg, send us a message. Tell us how it felt.
Yeah.
Anyway,
So this, you'll see, you're holding it now. You see that it's, you know, it's very,
is it okay for me
very
to
be careful,
like
very
this?
Careful, very gentle. Yeah.
I mean, I always like to juggle whatever I'm holding. Is this okay?
Yeah. You've been juggling the whole time here.
Right. Yeah. But you had kind of like a scowl on your face and I was like, should I stop? And I was like, it's just a little fun. I don't want to.
I'm just, you know, just very cautious.
Okay. I'll stop
my
juggling.
Mouse skulls, you know, I only have so many.
Right.
Yeah, so if you'll look very carefully on the underside, you'll see that this particular Fabergé mouse is actually signed by Rasputin and Yuri Gagarin.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
crazy.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Huh. And there's a third signature? Is this Yogi Berra's signature?
That's right.
Well?
That's right. I know.
Did you do that?
I don't like to brag, but sometimes.
Huh. The three of them. That would have been a time. That would have been a party.
Really? Yeah. No. They're great guys. Great guys. So
yeah.
Great.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
The best.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I would say like if I was gonna choose three people who had like signed Fabergé eggs, made out of mice, these are the three people.
It's them, right? It's basically the Mount Rushmore of signed Fabergé mice.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Well, that's really interesting. Your insights
you.
Have been
Thank
wonderful.
You.
Everything has been really great.
My pleasure.
Thanks for being on the show, I guess, is really what I'm getting at here.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. You know, I hope that as you sort of like continue to exist through time and eternity, that, mm-hmm. that you think back fondly on our time, just like I will as I continue my flaneuring.
Yeah, I would like to say that I'm actually having a procedure later this week. And I'm supposed to, apparently it's going to affect my memory in some ways.
Okay.
So there's a good chance that I'll forget this.
Yeah.
Or that it might be altered in some ways.
Sure.
For example, you might be a dragon in my memory.
Yeah, that seems reasonable. I would expect no less.
There are some dragon-like qualities to you now.
Yeah.
So
I've often been described as dragon-esque.
Yeah.
Sure.
In what settings?
Oh, well, you know, like at the store, or sometimes when I'm guarding, coveting piles of gold, when I'm, you know, slaying, knights in armor, they'd be the usual.
That's
sure.
When you're doing all of these things at the store.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, sometimes I curl serpentine-like around piles of gold, or just, you know, sometimes shiny litter on the floor at the store.
Well, there's lots of that in the stores. Yeah. People are not very courteous at stores,
I should say.
If you are one of those shoppers, cut it out, I would say.
Or please call in.
You can't call in, but send a message, I guess. They can't call, Kyle. It's not a joke, okay? I mean, it's not funny to me.
Mm, yeah. I'm sorry. If I've offended you, please call.
If you would like to hear your story read, send us a copy of it on our Facebook page. Make sure to like and follow us on Facebook and SoundCloud. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or through our RSS feed. We'd also like it if you left us a review. We always want to hear what you have to say. Special thanks to ZFWindler11 for use of their story in this week's show. Special thanks to our special guest, Kyle Rather, who also opened his home so that the Best Worst Story could go on the road this week. Our theme song is by Dustin Jones. Brian Dickman produces the show. I'm Cameron Lindsay, and this has been The Best Worst Story You've Never Read. Keep the stories coming.